100 Years' War, the Duguesclin period, Henry Despenser, Part 2. Now, Despenser perceived that the best way to obtain support for his crusade from England was to adopt a northern strategy. Some of Richard II's council had been advocating it for months. The commons, with their traditional concern for the wool trade and the Flemish markets, were more likely to contribute to the cost. So he proposed to the government to recruit an army of crusaders, lead them into Flanders via Calais. The irony of leading an urbanist crusade against the Count of Flanders, one of the leading urbanist princes in northern Europe, was not lost on contemporaries. Once Despenser had occupied Flanders, he proposed, with the support of the rebellious Flemish towns, to invade schismatic France. He promised to keep his army in the field for a full year. But the most attractive part of his offer was that the taxpayers would have only to meet part of the cost of the enterprise. Many of the participants would be serving without pay for the salvation of their souls. By selling crusading indulgences, the bishop expected to be able to make a substantial financial contribution to the cost of the others. Bishop Despenser's proposal was unwelcome to John of Gaunt. It reunited the old strategic divisions, which had apparently been laid to rest in the summer, and threatened the prospect of getting parliamentary approval for his plan in Castile. Behind his difficulties lay the beginnings of a significant shift of power, which made it increasingly difficult for Gaunt to impose his will on the English government. In the absence of any formal arrangements for a minority or a regency, Gaunt's influence depended on the continued passivity of the boy king. By 1382, this passivity could no longer be taken for granted. Richard II was now 15 years old, a year past the age which tradition was the beginning to recognize as an age of majority for rulers. His own personality, willful, self-conscious, impulsive, keen to impress, was already beginning to make itself felt behind the confines of his household. The peasants' revolt, in which he had played a prominent role largely by his own making, had matured him. It had also dramatically brought home to him the significance of his own status as king. In January of 1382, King Richard took another step towards emancipation. He married Anne of Bohemia, the sister of the German Emperor Wenceslaus. The match, which was a considerable personal success in spite of its unpopularity in England, had been arranged mainly by Richard's household officers with strong personal support of the king himself. It brought him a degree of emotional independence and a larger, more organized household, both developments which encouraged him to take control of affairs in his own hands. It also distanced himself from his uncles and the great magnates who had dominated his early years. In July 1382, the king astonished the political community by dismissing the chancellor, Sir Richard Scrope, a friend and former steward of John of Gaunt, who had refused to give effect to what he regarded as a feckless royal grants in favor of Richard's friends. This was one of a number of incidents which made the role of Richard's friends more notable. Foremost among them were two men of conspicuous ability who were destined to play a major part in the political controversies in the following years, Sir Simon Burley and Sir Michael Pole. Burley was a former retainer of the Black Prince who had made and lost a fortune in the Wars of Poitou before becoming the boy king's tutor and mentor, and ultimately his vice chamberlain. Pole was the son of a famous wool merchant of Hull, who had been the old king's principal banker in the early years of the war. He was another man who had made his career as a professional soldier in France. Now in his early 50s, he had served the Black Prince and John of Gaunt in Gascony. Pole had been assigned to the royal household by Parliament in 1381 to advise and govern the king, and he quickly acquired a strong personal influence over him. Burley and Pole had vested interests in the effective exercise of power by the king and became notorious for their willingness to use it in their own financial interests. But they were also intensely loyal to Richard. They brought to his council an intelligence and a detachment from the past controversies that enabled them to see the issues more clearly, perhaps, than the king's uncles and great magnates who had dominated the government at the beginning of his reign. Neither Richard nor his advisors had yet developed the pronounced views about the war which they would hold later, but they were far less inclined before to defer to the opinions of the Duke of Lancaster. Although Burley and Pole were for some time being Richard's preeminent political advisors, there were other men about the king, less involved in the day-to-day conduct of government, whose role was becoming important. Some of them were knights of his household, the kind of men who had been the executants of royal policy for generations, and whose comparatively modest origins made them dependent on royal favor. Some of them were young noblemen of Richard's own age, men like Ralph Stafford, the 15-year-old son of the Earl of Stafford, who was probably closer to the king than anyone until his premature death in 1385, or the 16-year-old Thomas Mowbray, Earl of Nottingham. More significant, because he was more ambitious than these two, at 20, rather older, was Robert de Vere, Earl of Oxford. He had ridden with Richard to Mile End in 1381 and had shortly became his inseparable companion. These and other immature young men fed the king's self-confidence and lapped up the honors and grants at his hands. The relations between the crown and the nobility were critical to the political stability of late medieval England and depended in large measure on even-handed distribution of patronage of the crown. The use of that patronage to build up power and wealth for a handful of privileged individuals and their dependents was bound to make enemies amongst older men excluded from favor. In the 1380s, these resentments burned with special bitterness in the breast of Richard's uncle, the ambitious and assertive Earl of Buckingham, one of the most prominent men in the kingdom by right of birth. Buckingham was condemned to watch impotently as his views were ignored and lesser men's claim to Richard's largesse were satisfied in offensive abundance. For different reasons, the cliquishness of the king's circle also had the effect of progressively isolating John of Gaunt. He had become a lonely figure by 1382. His great wealth made it unnecessary for him to forge alliance among his fellow magnates. His very qualities repelled friendship. As an astute and contemporary remarked, the English nobility were frightened and jealous of the spectacle of Gaunt's great power, sure judgment, and outstanding intellect. Nowhere was this fear and jealousy more strongly felt than among Richard II's inner circle. While the king lived in Gaunt's shadow, he could not truly reign. Richard's own isolation from his contemporaries and his emotional instability make it hard to identify any consistent theme in his behavior, but his occasional outbursts against his uncles were to become more frequent and more violent. So we've got our man, good old Despenser. He wants to do his crusade, and he wants to go into France, because he's not. This crusade is not going to the Holy Land. This is to deal with various other Christian groups, particularly the French, in hopes of Pope Urban liking what he's doing. But we also see at the same time the change in the leadership around the young king, and that's going to have a great effect on what's going to take place with the war and everything else later on. Now, next time, while Despenser is trying to gather up money and do other things, we've got to check and see what the French are going to be doing, as well as what the English are planning. So we'll be heading to France next time to see what the French king is doing. So there's a lot of strange things going on. We've got Van Artevelde and the Flanders people here. We've got the king. We've got the Spanish. We've got Despenser. We've got the young king of England. So this is going to get a little bit confusing. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.